You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hello!
Oh, we're actually doing the script. Go, go.
You ready? Yeah.
I can't.
Hello, and shut up. Bloody hell, woman. We're going.
Okay, I'm really quiet now.
Hello, and welcome to The Great Indoors,
the podcast which reveals everything you ever needed to know about interiors and explains how to make it all really work for you in your home.
I'm Sophie Robinson.
And I'm a very croaky Kate Watson-Smythe. I do apologise for that. But before we begin, a word about our new sponsors, Causton Architectural Detail, makers of a beautiful collection of coordinating sockets and switches, handles and hinges, and lighting for both indoors and outdoors.
I mean, I think it's one of the most overlooked elements when it comes to interior design. It's those touch points. You know, I have to admit, we all focus on colour and furniture, but, you know, often ignore those vital architectural details like light switches and sockets. And I think these can really make a difference to a scheme. And I have to admit, I can get a bit nerdy around this.
Oh, I love it. I mean, not to mention that really satisfying clunk of one of those toggle light switches. I mean, I swear when my kids were younger, they turned the lights off more because they like touching the switches.
I know, I've got those toggle switches and have to say they're very addictive. Now, Causton are known for their three main finishes of bronze, antique brass and polished nickel. So you can coordinate all the architectural details across the whole house, which I think is a really nice thing to do. But that's not all they do.
No, indeed. They have introduced a clear Perspex cover for their switches and sockets. This comes with a template that you can either paint to match the wall behind it, so you just kind of see the actual switch or the plug holes, or you can use that template to cut out a piece of wallpaper to exactly match what you've got going on the rest of the wall.
Now, I think this is absolutely thrilling because I'm about to have a bit of a redecoration at the house. There's a lot of wallpaper about to be installed, and I think this is a brilliant way to create a more seamless and integrated look. You know, especially if your wallpaper is quite specific. I mean, like, for example, if you've got a beautiful flower or maybe like a bird's head, you don't want it cut off. You can keep the whole design in its entirety. It's a really lovely design detail.
It's one of those tiny details that really makes a huge difference. If you've got wallpaper, then a white plastic switch can really spoil the overall effect. And if you have a pale or delicate pattern, you might not want a bold metallic finish on your light switches. So this is the perfect solution.
Exactly that. And I think it makes your scheme look even more thought out and considered. And I'm here for that. It's all about the little details, isn't it, Kate?
Absolutely.
If you want more details on the full Causton range, then check them out at causton.com. That's CORSTON.com.
Now, what have we got coming up in the show today?
Well, before we get into that, what's with the croaky voice, Kate? I think everybody's hearing a bit of a smoky, croaky voice.
If only it was that exciting, trying to turn myself into Mariella Frost up here. I had a bit of a late night, I'm afraid. Doesn't happen often.
So we were both out last night.
Yeah.
I left the party. We'll get into what party it was. So we were in London, weren't we? And I had to dash and get the train. You obviously stayed much later than me. We were at a lovely event. It was the Heels Dinner for Designers. That is a yearly must-have event for people in the interior design industry. It brings together the design community who design and sell their products through Heels and all the kind of media darling podcasters. That's us, isn't it?
Yeah.
There was Kat Burrows from The Times.
There's all the press and paper and magazines, and I can't do a lot of loud talking late at night anymore. And my
Clearly.
Voice is and then I got home. I got home at, you know, for me, really quite late. I mean, I think it was 11:30. And then, well, then I fell into conversation with the mad husband and we were up. I mean, it's so long since we've done this. We were up chatting till 1:30 in the morning. I mean, it's ridiculous. And as a result now, I can't speak. I had to get up early for the builders and, you know, so apologies for the croakiness.
Too much gassing.
Too much gassing.
Too much gassing the night before a podcast recording. That's a major fail.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Well, I'm quite jealous that you stayed up late partying while I fell asleep on the train back to Hayward's Heath. Oh, it's not so glamorous, it has to say. But exciting news about Heels for anybody who lives in the UK and has had an opportunity to visit Heels. It's one of my favourite stores. I have to say, I have a deep love of Heels. It's got such an incredible design heritage, hasn't it? And their flagship store on Tottenham Court Road. I mean, what we were sort of reflecting on, isn't it lovely it's still there? Tottenham Court Road in London was always, it's a big street, isn't it, for furniture stores?
Yeah.
And we've seen a lot of people come and go, haven't we, over the last couple of decades. And I suppose one of the biggest, for me, departures from Tottenham Court Road was Habitat leaving in 2021, we think. Habitat left their flagship store on Tottenham Court Road. And the exciting news is Heels is not only taking it over, but what we found out, reclaiming it, because it was all originally, it was Heels back in the day, that whole massive floor plan. And what was so hilarious was there is acres and acres of empty floor space for which we had our dinner in. They even had a little DJ. Did you have a little dance, Kate? There was a little DJ there. I noticed there was a bar.
I did not have a little dance. I had a little stand.
You had a little stand? Did you have a foot shuffle? But they made this it was like this incredible kind of like potential warehouse party. But the fact is that they actually open on the 14th of April, which time of publication of this podcast is tomorrow. Oh, we're obviously recording a little bit in advance, but we're all slightly on the edge of our seats to see if they're going to make it. But if you are in London and you're around the Tottenham Court Road area, I think it's well worth a visit. So we've got some very exciting news. This is quite an announcement. We have launched a new membership service for the devoted lovers of this podcast.
Yes, we couldn't do this podcast without you, our loving listeners. And we have developed a wonderful tribe of fellow interior design fanatics and renovators who tune in every week to hear our dulcet tones.
Now, we are more committed than ever to keep this podcast going, bringing together our love of interiors and giving you the industry insights, not to mention the expert interviews that all go together to help you create a home you love.
So with this in mind, there is a new way to support the podcast, and it comes with benefits.
When you subscribe to the Great Indoors Insiders, you get to enjoy ad-free listening, exclusive bonus content, and, it's very exciting this, first dibs on tickets to upcoming live events.
And to kick off, we have a trip abroad organised. That's right. We are taking the Great Indoors on tour with a holiday planned for Italy this October, a design trip to the design mecca that is Milan, and then on to Venice. And by becoming a member to the Great Indoors Insiders, you will get first chance to grab your place on this inspirational trip.
Woohoo! Get ready to pack your bags. Anyway, this just leaves me to thank you all for being part of our flourishing design community. And our hope is that by becoming a member, you will not only be supporting Kate and I on producing this weekly podcast, but you will also enjoy all the benefits of becoming a part of our Insiders Club.
We've put the link in the show notes, or you can visit www.thegreatindoorspodcast.com for further details. Now, it's not news that we're still in the middle of this terrible cost of living crisis, and it felt things had reached peak 1950s post-war rationing a few weeks ago when news reports said there was a shortage of tomatoes, lettuce and cucumber.
So we got thinking, cue Sex and the City style voiceover, could it be time to start thinking about growing your own?
So we waited until the weather improved a bit and it was planting time, and we are thrilled today to be chatting to Rekha Mistry. Rekha is a presenter, author, food writer and crucially owner, renter slash gardener, whatever the term is, of an allotment in North London that is bursting with the best seasonal produce all year round.
Yes, her book, Rekha's Kitchen Garden, Homegrown Wisdom from the Gardener's Allotment, is perfect for all budding veg growers out there. So Rekha, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And I must admit, I'm going to admit right now that I've got a personal interest in this.
Right.
Here we go.
Yeah, this is where it's really nice to have a podcast, because you can start reeling in people that you actually really want to talk to personally. So, mm-hmm. Rekha, I live in East Sussex and we have a lovely garden. My mum lives next door and my mum has a very healthy allotment garden. She's got a greenhouse. She's got four raised beds and she's, you know, really busy growing all her veg and everything. You know, we really enjoy eating her produce all year round. Some of it more successful than others. We can get onto that. She has a nightmare with crooked carrots. But as a complete newbie beginner, and I think there's lots of other people like me out there who are thinking of getting into growing your own veg, I just would love to start with, is it easy?
Where do you start?
Yeah, where do you start? Exactly.
What I tend to say is start with what you like to eat. Back to basics. So things like your potatoes, your carrots, your spinach, your runner beans, things very, very simple vegetable. Go back to those. And that's where you start. You start with something you know you've eaten all the time. And so you know when you try and grow that, you know when to harvest. Because sometimes if you try and grow a really complicated vegetables that you've just picked up a seed pack and trying to figure out when do I need to harvest you might just miss the boat. That's something that I always say about, say, aubergines. People don't know when to harvest. When is the right time? You can see the fruit. When should I harvest that? Is when the skin is still shiny and not stop turning dull. That is the perfect time to harvest. See, these are the little things as you become a gardener. But first thing first, your very simple vegetables is what I would say grow. So it's your potatoes, your tomatoes and beans, things like that. Something that is so simple that you see all the time in supermarkets. So you know when to harvest things.
But that's interesting. Coming back to Sophie's crooked carrots. I mean, I think carrots is often a thing. When my children were younger, I remember we tried to grow carrots. Mm-hmm. Well, there were all sorts of issues. I mean, we've got to have special soil, haven't we?
That's not the answer to carrots. Carrots, we've got so many varieties out there. You don't have to have the longest of carrots. You can get the really minute little ones that you can grow in pots.
You just got to go for the button size carrot. Oh, I'm going to tell my mother. This is going to be a breakthrough, because every year she gets really upset with funny crooked carrots.
Oh, no, but I think because in our heads we look at supermarkets provide you with the nicest, longest vegetables and, you know, really appetizing, but you don't want that. Carrots is not something you have to always buy the long varieties. You can go for the really short, stout varieties. And the one I always say, if your soil is not sandy, but if it's clay and stony, go for one called Paris Market 5 Atlas. So there's Paris Market is a variety, and then you've got different varieties within that variety. So go for those. And when you search that, it's literally a small carrot, but it's stout enough that you can peel it and eat it. So it's perfect. It's absolutely perfect.
Does that mean also if it's short? Because I'm thinking, you know, years ago we lived in a flat with a balcony, and, you know, people always say you can be a balcony gardener and grow things in pots. But obviously carrots are tricky because you need a very tall pot. So I'm guessing that perhaps a short fat carrot works well for people who have only a window box or a pot or a small area.
Yeah, it's perfect for that scenario. It's perfect for small gardens and small space gardening. I think the attitude needs to change. I think we've always wanted that to change as a gardener. When we produce vegetables, why are we just so honed in on straight and perfect? Why? I think that goes back to when we do all these shows and we see perfect vegetables. And so that gives that idea that everything should be perfect. It's not, because at the end of the day, you're just going to peel it, cook it, and once it gets in your stomach,
yes.
What shape, you know? So I mean, you need to think of that side of it. It's a practicality of a vegetable, not the perfect side of it. And I've never liked that idea of perfect growing. It's what my soil can give me, and I'll be happy with it, and I'll work with it. You have to be patient a little bit to create what you can. And it'll be tasty, no matter what you think, it'll be tasty. So anything is possible, everything is edible.
Another thing that happens with growing your own, as someone who benefits from my mum's allotment, is you get gluts of things, don't you? So you mentioned beans. My mother's run of beans are absolutely prolific. We eat nothing but beans all summer long, which is great because we love the beans. And then there's the beetroots. They come thick and fast at one point. What can you advise people to do when they are growing their own, but then they have these harvests of one particular vegetable that comes all at once? How do you deal with that?
And also, it's, you know, if you get a massive amount of potatoes, there's only so many potatoes, you know, that one family of four can eat.
But potatoes store well. If you know how to store potatoes, they store. I mean, I'm still using mine from September. They're still going. So when you harvest potatoes, don't wash them. Once you've dug them out, don't wash them. Don't put liquid over your harvest, because that is asking for pests and viral diseases to get in. So keep them as is. Just rub the soil off, dry them out in the sun, and put them in Hessian bags and into the cool section of your shed. That's how you store them. Because think of them being in the ground. They need to be cold. They need to be in the dark. And that's what you're providing them. And that's how they'll stay.
And it's that simple. Because I remember we lived for a long time when I was growing up in my grandmother's house. And she had a vegetable patch, and she also had a small orchard with apple trees. Mm-hmm. And she used to preserve her apples. I can still remember it. She had a garage, a double garage, which had half had her car in it and the other half had her garden tools. And hanging from the ceiling were her old tights with apples slotted into the tights and twisted round. And it was, I mean, it was like bobbing for apples. It was like Halloween in there all the time. But I mean, you know, I don't know. Is that just for apple storage? Does one need to keep one's old tights?
So that is a way of keeping the apples aerated. So that's what we do with onions and garlic. That's why they're hung the way they are, because you've got airflow going all around. That's the reason. But tights is a great idea for apples. I've never thought of that one. So thank you.
Thank you, Grandma. I know something.
But things like, things like beetroot, sometimes we tend to grow, this is spring, so now we're going to go out there and go rows and rows and rows of beetroot. Stop. Just do one row, let that grow, and as soon as that sort of sprouts, then 2 weeks later, then sow the next one. So you've got a succession of crop, not here you go, I've got everything in my hand. So this is how I grow. I only grow like a small row of beetroot. And then as soon as that comes through, that'll take about 3 weeks for it to germinate and get going. As soon as that happens is when I'll do the next row. So I've got 3 week succession of everything.
Oh, that's super clever.
Yes, that's how a grower would do things, is in succession.
Yeah.
And then towards the end, if I've got a really big glut, I will pickle my beetroots. It is the best thing, is having your own pickle. I can't, you know, I don't buy any pickles anymore. There's no gherkins from outdoors. There's no pickled runner beans.
No,
have you
I've
ever
never
tried
heard of this.
Pickling your runner beans.
Runner bean. Oh my goodness.
That comes from World War II, when we had to do this kind of preserving. And that is such a good, and it's very simple. You just blanch your runner beans once they're sliced, blanch them and put them in cold water so that they still stay crispy. Get your vinegar, and if you want to make it spicy, sweet, it's all up to you. Add your additives in there, whatever you wish. And then just put your runner beans into the jar, put your vinegar in it, close it, and you're done.
So then how do you eat them? You eat them as a cold pickle with a salad or something?
Yeah. I mean, I've even added them in my stir fries, because if I want something, I will use it. I'll just wash off the vinegar, and then I'll add it in right at the end, because they're cooked anyway, that they've been pickled, that they're ready to use. So just add them in. So it's not just about finding just one way to use it. There's so many ways to use these things.
Keeping them going for longer. I suppose freezing's another option.
Freezing. I do freeze runner beans. I blanch them and then I'll cool them down, pat them dry, and in they go into the freezer. So I have something for the winter.
Yeah. So you can keep on enjoying the fruits of your labour all year round.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel we're slightly bombarding listeners with information, she says in her croaky voice, but we've established now that we can grow short, fat carrots, so we don't need to worry about the soil. We can keep potatoes for 6 months in an unwashed potatoes in a Hessian sack in the dark. We can pickle some of the other vegetables, and we're growing in stages. I mean, even I might get inspired. But the thing...
I like the word
the
might.
The thing that worries me, I have grown tomatoes before, but I've got to say, and maybe this is just me, I'm slightly scared of the commitment or the amount of work, because my mother grows tomatoes and there's a whole period of time where she's got to go out there every day and water them. She's got to pinch the top out. She's got to do a bit of singing. There's a whole thing. This is a big commitment. But on the other hand, I suppose it's free food. So you got to put the work in, yeah?
Right. So what your mum does, she is a great gardener. It sounds like she is on it. But as a newbie, I would recommend not to grow more than three things to start with. So just grow three favorite vegetables. That way you are committed to just a small section of your garden, not the whole full on, you know, go for it. Because that way you will know how much time you have for the next year that, okay, I'll do maybe four plants of this one and I'll do six plants of that. And even on an allotment, when somebody new comes on, we always suggest just do a quarter of your bed, work that, and then work the next quarter. So don't try and do the whole thing in one go, like, because you think everyone else has got perfect, beautiful plots. It's taken me 12 years to be where I am today. You know, I started in a small section and I built it up.
That's such good advice, because I would be that person, was like, right, I'm going for the Chelsea Gardening Gold Award allotment mission.
Yes.
And I'm getting my and then I'm going to have my canes and I'm going to have all the little accoutrements and make it all look very beautiful.
Because you do have that vision. You go to these shows and you are inspired and you want to get going, but where do you start? But always start small is what I always say. And always go for one vegetable, one flower, one herb.
Ooh,
that way
nice.
You get to know what you're doing, how you're doing things. And you're incorporating colour within. Because I mean, as much as I like the old-fashioned way of rows and rows and rows of vegetables, I want colour. I want some structure in my greens. You know, I want some... It has to look good as much as it has to taste good.
Oh, so tell us, what's colour? What can you introduce to make your allotment or veg patch look beautiful?
Flowers that help your vegetables. So controlling pests without using pesticide. So that is what companion planting is. So plants like, say, your lavenders, your rosemaries, your marigolds, things like that will help because they're very pungent smells, aromas to these plants, and that helps move some pests away. So aphids hate the smell of marigolds, and that's why you plant them with your tomatoes.
I love that. I love a marigold as well.
And nasturtiums are a really good thing to grow with your beans, because nasturtiums attract the black bean fly and they leave your beans alone.
This is genius.
You'll just turn the leaf of a nasturtium and you'll see all the black fly there. And your beans are fine.
So you don't panic that you see them there because they're going to stay there. So it's not like, oh, because my reaction would be, oh my God, they're all over the nasturtiums. They're just going to shimmy onto the tomatoes, but they're not.
No, they won't. They will not go onto your beans. They will stay where they are, and you leave them where they are because they are just sheltering from the sun under those leaves. So leave them. And I'm not going to eat those leaves. What I want is the flower and the seed pod. Because the seed pod will make me my poor man's capers.
Well, hold on a minute. Back up. Poor man's capers. Can I just say to listeners, we're just going to have a little 10-second pause here while you get a pen and paper, because this is all coming at you. So it's so much information. So poor man's capers, talk to me.
They are the seed pods of nasturtiums. Before they go harder or before they fall onto the ground, don't pick the ones that are on the ground. Pick the ones that are still hanging on to the plant. Pick those and you make a pickle like you would make gherkins. It's literally as simple as that. But the sharpness, the spiciness sort of mellows down a little bit, but still gives you that caper taste. So that's why it's called poor man's capers.
So they're not only looking beautiful, but you keeping your bugs off your beans. You can also put my mum loves to put the flowers in a salad because they're also edible, aren't they?
Yes. And towards the end of the season, you make your pickles.
Then you make your poor man's capers at the end. Wow. Fabulous.
Well, if you want the recipe, it's on my blog site. So it's there. So you don't need to get your pen and paper out just now.
Yes. You've got a blog. Oh, go on. Tell us about your blog. What's the address?
It is RekaGardenAndKitchen.com.
And the book, obviously, which we mentioned at the top of the show, which I will be ordering.
Yeah, which is the other way around, which is Rekha's Kitchen Garden.
Amazing.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
And the other thing, though, is that I think I have done before and feels less scary in terms of growing and is also a beautiful addition to a garden, to a balcony, to a window box, is a herb garden. So you mentioned there in passing rosemary. I mean, lavender, we don't well, I was around in the 80s when it was all about lavender ice cream, but most of the time we're not eating lavender, it's for the scent. But a herb garden's quite an easy way in, isn't it?
It is, because that they don't need as much attention. Most of our herbs are Mediterranean herbs. Mediterranean herbs love dry conditions. So though they need some water, they don't need constant watering. You don't need to do it every day. And you can forget about them. Some of the woody herbs, like your thyme and your rosemaries, you can forget to water them. I actually don't water them. They're in the ground and they're fine where they are. And even in that hot spell that we had last year, they were fine. They were actually happier than they ever have been, because they need that heat and less water is what they need. So I think herbs is a good way of introducing yourself to a small garden in your back garden.
Yeah, we've got guinea pigs, and they are the fattest, happiest guinea pigs in the summer because they just munch on herbs, because they just keep coming, don't they? Herbs. I mean,
that's right. The more you cut, the better it is for the plant.
We literally can't eat the amount of parsley that my mum grows, so the guinea pigs just get really fat on parsley and sage.
Mm.
One thing I wanted to touch on, which I think is another benefit of gardening, is this element of well-being. And this is another reason I think why I want to get into it. I mean, yes, it's deeply satisfying growing your own veg, it's saving on the shop, but there's a feeling for me about getting your hands in the earth. And I mean, Kate, it's interesting you saying, like, you know, the bother and the frustration of having to remember to water your tomato plants and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I am that person. I'm like you, intolerant and impatient.
What are you saying?
I know you so well. But that's the challenge, isn't it, with gardening, is it forces you to slow down. It forces you to honour the seasons, to take your time.
It forces you to become a plant parent, because you're nurturing those things. It's like nurturing a child. You are nurturing it. You are responsible for that thing not to die. And that slowly gets embedded. Few vegetables at a time, it gets embedded in you that I have to care for them. You really become a plant parent when you start growing from seed and you start seeing that thing grow all the way up, and then you're in the ground. Right, I'll let you be. You know, you're now at university. You go and do your thing, kind of a moment, but you're still keeping an eye on that plant.
It's really interesting, that element of well-being, because I think it's important for all of us, and perhaps even more important for city dwellers who don't see as much green as Sophie might do living in Sussex. You know, she opens her doors, she's got green fields all around her. You know, I am in the urban jungle. And I think it's really important that we take the time. And I very much like the fantasy of it. You know, I'm going to put on my floppy hat. I'm going to get a lovely trug basket. I'm not going to put a flowery dress on. There are limits. But, you know, I am going to, my idea, I float around and I might deadhead a few roses and sniff a little bit of lavender. And, you know, that's all fine for about a week. And then I forget. But maybe, as you say, because you literally, to pardon a pun, grow into it, maybe we need to make the effort to force ourselves, a bit like exercise. Perhaps if we force ourselves to do a little bit of gardening, it will become a habit. And then, as well as food and everything else, we get the well-being benefits.
Yes, because you're just slowing yourself down without having that meditation, because sometimes some people will find it hard to meditate, but by just weeding, even for half an hour, weeding is a form of meditation, because you are concentrating on that small piece of land or soil or pot and saying, right, you're coming out, you're coming out, you're doing it slowly, and you're actually thinking about what you're doing. So your mind has moved away from any stress that you've been feeling and only concentrating on that small section. And when your hands touch soil, there is something that happens, well, for me anyway, is you really feel joy. And when it's even warmer in the summer, you think, oh my goodness, no wonder the plants are loving it, because you can actually feel the warmth within the soil. And it warms me. It really does warm me up.
And you can wear a floppy hat and have a trug while you're doing it if you like, if that makes you happy too.
No, I've got really dirty trousers, you know, like holes everywhere. I couldn't care. My plants don't care what I look like.
I've got to start with the outfit, you know.
Just... Okay, fine.
There's so much, you know, Rekha, and I'm really interested. Did you always want to be a gardener? I believe you started off working in a bathroom showroom. I mean, did gardening come to you a bit later on?
I've always had gardening in the back of my head. So when my husband and I started our business, it was always there. I've always had it. But with children, and when you become a taxi runner for them, you know, your life is like, okay, it's for them first. But gardening was always there. And when I had always said that once they get a little bit older and they're going to school themselves, going to high school themselves, I want to get an allotment. And that was like, okay, mother, you're only 40 something. You really want to get that? That's for what happens when you retire. Allotments were for retiring. But this was the concept I'm talking about 25 years ago. That was the concept of these things. And I said, yeah, I want to get one. And they go, fine, you know, if you want one. So I had to put myself down on a waiting list. Now, that only happened. And when I thought, okay, it'll take me 5 years before I get a plot, because that's how long it takes, I got it within 2 months. And I thought, wow, this is moving a bit too fast for me now. So take it easy. And so I got just half a plot. Just to start, I just took on half a plot rather than a full. And once I got onto that plot, that was it. But my mum was always a good gardener. Like you say, our mums and grandmothers are great at these things. So I've always had the passion, but never got around to really saying, I want to do this. And then I did Big Allotment Challenge, and I did that for fun. I never thought I would get in. I just entered that competition thinking they will look at my handwritten scribble, and they did, and they said they invited me to participate. And I thought, why do I do this to myself? Why do I put myself through all these things? And it always comes true. Why? And so I did that, and it was on the show I realized I wanted to do horticulture. It was at that point when I spoke to the gardener who was there, who was looking after ours when we weren't around, and she said, if you want to do it, do an RHS course and you can go into horticulture and work with the big gardens that you wish to work with. And that stayed in my head until we sold our business. And I thought, not ready to do just nothing and be a lady of leisure. I still want to do my own thing. And I did horticulture, and I went back to college, did that. And whilst I was doing that, I was blogging at the same time. And this is where garden writing came about, and I started writing for magazines. They've invited me to write for them. And if it inspires somebody else, that's even better.
Oh, you've inspired me. I definitely. And that's quite a task. I think you talk with such passion and you make it sound achievable. And I think that's the magic, isn't it? Accessible and achievable, and breaking it down for people.
Yes. Just try and see how far you can take yourself. And just do it is what I say.
Do you feel being a gardener makes you more resilient? I mean, you're talking about a real resilience there of a get up and go and just do it attitude. And I'm just wondering, with gardening, there must be lots of failures along the way. Wonky carrots being just one of them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've had a lot of failures, but you have to be realistic in what you're doing. Forget what anyone else thinks what you're doing. I really didn't care how I was seen on my allotment, because I would do unusual vegetables as well. And people would go, really, Rekha, really, you know, will that work? But that was what I wanted to do. And I didn't care as such what others thought of what I was doing. But they embraced it. Some of them even came to me saying, right, Now I've grown what you've grown. How do I cook it? And that was like a tick box. Yes, now this is working because we are interacting through vegetables.
Oh, such a great sentence. You bring me to where I was coming to, actually, because, well, firstly, it seems that gardening is actually a metaphor for life. But, you know, we'll leave that to one side. The cooking element, because I think some people who are cooks come to growing because they cook and they want to have amazing ingredients. It seems to me like you came to it because you wanted to do the nurturing and the growing and the cultivating. So have you learnt to cook more alongside, or were you always a great cook?
That's always also been in me. But when I go out to eat and I read the menu and they go say the word celeriac, if I hadn't, this is going back, say, 20 years ago, celeriac, what the hell is celeriac? And this is how I would, and I would eat it thinking, okay, it tastes a bit like celery. Is that why it's called celeriac? And then I go back and I sort of find out about it, read books, and then, you know, go online. And this is how my vision comes about for a vegetable and what to do with a vegetable. And I'll say, okay, I need to grow this. And it always is, I need to grow this. No matter what I eat, I will always say, I need to grow that. And so there is... The eating element always comes in as to what would I do with it. So if I plan to grow it, what am I going to make with it? So I always think about the last bit before I think about the middle bit. How will I use it? Because I don't want to just grow it and make it look pretty in the garden. I want to eat it.
Rekha, it's just been such a delight. And you've for sure informed and indeed inspired me, I think, beyond my initial expectations. It's been wonderful.
Well, I do hope I get to hear that. Yes, I've got a garden now, and yes, I've got, you know, three of this and three of that. It'd be nice to hear that.
That's the tip, because I've hardly got a garden, and what there is of it is mostly builder's junkyard. You know, I've got dreams of a greenhouse, so, you know, we're inspired. You'll have to, you know, maybe we'll come to you and you can show us how to cook it. That'll be the next follow up.
That'd be nice.
I'll bring my pickled beans. I can bring a dish.
Yeah, I think so. I think that there needs to be a date, you know, a dinner date now.
Yeah, I'm in.
Rekha, thank you so much for your generosity, not in your time, but all your knowledge and sharing your passion with us too. Can we just remind everybody of your blog one last time to go and get all those brilliant tips?
The blog is rekhagardenkitchen.com and the book is Rekha's Kitchen Garden by DK.
Oh, amazing. Rekha, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
And all that remains for us to thank our lovely sponsors, Causton.com.
And thank you to our producer, Sarah Cadden of Feast Collective. Make sure you're following us. I'm Sophie Robinson Interiors, and she's Mad About the House. And Rekha, what's your Instagram?
Usual, Rekha Garden Kitchen.
Fabulous. Thank you so much, and we'll see you in the great indoors, or maybe a bit outdoors now.